Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through the underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Show topics and guests focus on rising public awareness about local and regional concerns. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Stories of sexual assault on American college campuses are frequent new topics for this past year. Although a recent federal report estimated only about 0.02% of the enrolled students reported a forcible sex offense, many experts believe that sexual assault is seriously underreported and incidences are much likely higher. Studies have found that young women in college are far less likely to report incidents of abuse than those who are not in school, and only 20% of the college students reported when they had been assaulted. Today we'll be addressing sexual assault on college campuses. I'll be talking with my guests, Jesse Torrey, Associate Director at RISE, a nonprofit organization providing crisis intervention and treatment services to survivors of sexual and intimate partner violence and their loved ones, Ashley Vereen, Education Services Coordinator at RISE, Sherry Love, Assistant Coordinator for SAFER, a Cal Poly's support to survivors of sexual assault, dating, and domestic violence and stalking, and Katie Palmer, Student Assistant for SAFER. Today's show is live, and you can be part of our discussion by calling in with your questions or comments during the next hour. To make sure your comments get on the air, please call in early. The number to call us is 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875. And I want to welcome all of you here to today's show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Even though I gave a real quick overview of both of the organizations that you represent here, if you could talk a little bit about how your organizations really apply to the topic today, it would be helpful. So I'll start with SAFER.
Great. So SAFER is Cal Poly's on-campus resource for students. We do educational outreach on preventing sexual violence, domestic violence, dating violence, and stalking on campus. We also provide crisis counseling services and advocacy on campus. So we work very closely with our counseling center, the Dean of Students, the Office of Student Rights and Responsibilities at the University Police Department, and many other entities on campus to help students who may have experienced any type of relationship violence or sexual assault so that they have a seamless support network available to them. And we also partner very closely with RISE, who's our co-guest on the program.
And we'll be talking more about that collaboration because that seems to be something that campuses are moving toward, and I'm sure Jesse wants to talk about that. But Sherry, your role at SAFER is what? Is it a new role?
My role is a new role. I'm the assistant coordinator. We have, in terms of our professional staff, we have our coordinator, Christina Caviani, who's not here today, but she's been part of the program for 5 years and has grown the program to what it is now. And my position was created by student success fee funds. So students decided they wanted more professional staff available to them. And so I was hired as part of that additional staff. And we have many student assistants who work for us. So we're primarily a student-run program. So a lot of our outreach is provided by students who actually go out and do peer education on campus.
Okay, great. And Katie, you've been with the program, you said, before 4 years?
Yes, this is my fourth year.
Okay, and as a student, you're now a Cal Poly student.
Yes.
You're going to be finishing.
Yes, finally.
Pretty quick. Yes. And your role in the organization.
Yeah, so something that's really unique, I think, about being a part of this organization is that I have had the opportunity from doing everything from representing SAFER to California state legislatures, and I have presented to over 700 people in Greek life. We've done peer mentoring programs. I'm a crisis counselor certified by RISE. So I work with students who and their friends or family who have been affected by sexual assault, domestic and dating violence, and stalking. I've been able to meet the president, the vice president, dean of students, UPD, and really form these really close collaborations and strengthen the campus community to be a safer community through pretty much every possible avenue. And that's a really unique opportunity.
Yeah, and you were saying before we came on the air that that SAFER actually started, it was an effort that started with President Baker.
Yes.
After the Kristen Smart disappearance.
Right.
And there was a concern about what was happening with assaults on campus and reporting.
Absolutely.
On campus.
Yeah, and so President Baker definitely led that and started that. And if you've been around San Luis Obispo or the Cal Poly community for a while, you may have remembered the Red Handprint Project. And so that really kind of started SAFER, the SAFER program. But I have to say, within the last 4 years I've been here, with Christina really taking charge, with Sherry being a part of this, both our professional staff is growing, our student staff is growing, we're gaining huge amounts of national support with the White House reports that have been coming out. And I've seen our program really grow and blossom into something that is really, really incredible, I think.
Okay.
I'm biased.
Of course, absolutely. We're going to talk, Jesse, can you talk a little bit about RISE?
Absolutely. So RISE is was born January 2013 out of a merger between the SARP Center, the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center, San Luis Obispo County's Rape Crisis Center, and the North County Women's Shelter, which was a domestic violence agency. So we are we're growing up. We're a toddler now. And we are a dual agency serving survivors and loved ones of sexual assault, intimate partner violence.
And the name RISE stands for?
The name RISE.
Is it an acronym?
It is not an acronym. That is a very common question. Thank you, Chris. We do have a tagline.
I saw your tagline.
Respect, inspire, support, empower, which really kind of are words that underscore how we want to do the work we do in our community. Mm-hmm. We really wanted to choose a name that embodied what happens when people come through our doors. We talk a lot about the trauma that brings people to us and the negative aspects. And what happens when people come to RISE, when they come to SAFER, they have the opportunity to start their own healing process. And that's really what we wanted the name of our agency to embody. We provide a whole range of services from prevention education, and Ashley can talk a little bit about that. And we collaborate with SAFER in that regard as well. We provide 24-hour crisis support. So we have a 24-hour crisis line. We have crisis advocates that are state certified that answer that telephone. We provide accompaniments for victims of sexual assault to law enforcement, court, medical offices, hospitals, wherever they really need us. And we also provide advocates that can bring people into safe housing. Mm-hmm. We have two safe houses, one in Atascadero and one in Paso for victims of domestic violence. And we have a counseling program that's free to the community for survivors and loved ones of those crimes as well and their children. We provide legal support. We have a full-time legal advocate. She's not an attorney, but she provides support and accompaniment throughout the restraining order process for domestic violence. Am I missing anything?
I think you've got mostly everything. It's quite a long list. So.
Yeah, one of the other things that we do, and we kind of forget that this is a program, but our volunteer program is a core piece of how we're able to provide the level and the amount of services that we do. We rely hugely on Cal Poly, and that's a big part of our partnership with SAFER. It's a 65-hour training that certifies people to be crisis advocates, confidential.
As Katie was
as
talking
Katie
about.
Has been a wonderful RISE volunteer for many years. And they staff our crisis line. So those trainings happen twice a year, and we're actually going to be starting one up pretty soon. And they help in the shelter. They help with childcare. They do all kinds of outreach for us. And, you know, we have about 25 staff members and around 50 volunteers.
Right.
And they are the heart and the core of our ability to do our work, and also really are helping educate community members on this issue so that we can create a stronger, safer, and more welcoming community for people to come forward and disclose when they've been victimized.
And Ashley, in talking about the education programs that you're a part of, you want to give kind of an overview of
those
different?
Great. So I'm one of the education services coordinators at RISE. I have a kind of co-partner who does a lot of the presentations with me. I go out not only into the community, but mainly into schools, so middle schools, high schools. I've done a few presentations for Cal Poly students and things like that. Mainly the goal of this is to educate people on what is sexual assault, what is sexual harassment, what is intimate partner violence, what is consent, just a whole wide range of things, really with the goal being that none of us have jobs anymore, you know, that we can stop some of these things happening,
right.
You know, before they occur.
Okay. So let's delve into first, you know, I think probably the first thing is you started to lead into, Ashley, is what is or what isn't. So let's talk about some of the myths, some of the misconceptions that kind of are at the core of some of the issues around assaults on campuses and some of the concerns just generally that you're dealing with.
Absolutely. One of the main misconceptions that I get every single time I do a presentation is the idea that women are lying about being sexually assaulted.
They misunderstood.
Right. Yes. There seems to be a big idea that women have sex and then the next day regret it. Mm-hmm. And so they report a sexual assault. Absolutely, that can happen. But the statistics, as far as that go, are very, very rare. Sometimes I tell men, you know, as a male, you're far more likely to actually be sexually assaulted than to be falsely accused of sexual assault. It's around, you know, they say between 2 and 10% of reports of sexual assault are false. I would argue it is far, far less than that, because there isn't a distinction made between a false rape report and an unfounded rape report or sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Unfounded can mean a whole slew of things. It can mean that, you know, the statute of limitations is up. It can mean that there isn't enough evidence for a case to go forward. It can mean that the district attorney or something like that has decided not to file charges. It can mean that the victim has recanted for obviously, you know, various reasons. And that's included in that 2% to 10% statistic. So, you know, it's difficult to explain that to people, because we see it on television quite a bit. I notice that I'll be watching, you know, TV and I'll see, you know, crime dramas and things like that. And it'll have a woman falsely reporting an assault. And so I think that helps perpetrate that idea that this is going on.
Other myths, misconceptions.
Well, one of the things I wanted to just mention is we do talk about women as the victims of sexual assault and intimate partner violence, and men as the perpetrators. And, you know, that's a default that we often go to, because the numbers are back it up,
mm-hmm.
right? So most victims are women, and most perpetrators.
Most reported victims.
Yes, but I would argue most victims are women. That doesn't mean that men and trans people are also not victims of sexual assault.
Correct.
And intimate partner violence. And I would argue that as hard as it is for a woman to come forward and tell her story,
mm-hmm.
it is much harder for men and for LGBT people to come forward and feel like they can get the support and help they need and the validation and be believed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes women aren't believed. for telling what's happened to them. And this is across the board for all victims. And it goes back to why we what our name changed. We really wanted a name that didn't say women's shelter,
right.
And didn't say rape, because the connotation is that those are places for women to come and get support and help.
But there's no place for a man.
Right. And so mm-hmm. that's not the truth, right? Mm-hmm. So SAFER serves men, mm-hmm. serves members of the LGBT community, as does RISE. And that's something that we really want to make sure our community is aware of, that anyone is welcome to come through our doors, and really understand that the reality is that most perpetrators are men.
Mm-hmm.
Most men are not perpetrators, which is also a really important distinction to make, right? Most men are wonderful. but what we want to do is hold accountable those that are perpetrating these crimes, really focus on the fact that those are the people responsible. No one is responsible for being assaulted. And you know, we can talk a little bit more about those problems with victim blaming. And that women by and large are the victims, but that it does not tell the whole story.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not just a woman's issue. You know, we've right. kind of seen that for years and years. It's really a human rights issue.
Mm-hmm. On the campus as well, are you finding that there has been more of a transition toward it being more unisexual in terms of the approach for the services, less inclined to just be specific to women, to heterosexual assault? Are you finding that that's part of your education? Is it a different approach, or has it always been there?
To an extent, it's always been there. We have, in recent years, kind of revamped our programming with particularly Greek life. So the way the Greek life works is that there's three prongs. One's the multicultural fraternities and sororities. One's IFC, which is fraternities, and then Panhellenic. And research has shown that traditionally men are more likely to listen to men than they are to women. And so in recent years, we've really looked at our programming and seen, okay, well, maybe what we have been doing isn't quite as effective. So we've seen a lot more male engagement since we've looked at that. We've hired many male staff, both within our student assistant. We used to have a professional staff. And that's definitely a discussion that we are having with higher-ups in our organization. So yes, to an extent. However, I think that there is opportunity for growth, considerable opportunity for growth, and it is something that we're trying to strengthen, I think, actively.
What in the intro I was talking about the underreporting by students on campuses. So, you know, is that an issue that you're finding at Cal Poly?
I think it's a perpetual issue that really comes to a climate of victim blaming. One of the really positive things that have happened this year is because the issue of sexual assault on college campus has been in the national spotlight. And so because of that, I think the visibility has made students and families more aware about the issue, and kind of destigmatizes in a way. So in that sense, this past quarter, we've had a lot more students reaching out for resources through our program. Mm-hmm. And one of the factors is that the CSU system really was looking at what CSUs are doing to support students. And one of the things that they realized was they needed supporters and advocates on campus that had the ability to be confidential. And
were they not confidential before? There was a question about that.
Previously, we were under the Dean of Students, and as in that position, we still are under the Dean of Students, but we were required to report all of the students' names who came to us. Now, that didn't mean that their name was broadcast across campus or anything like that. Their names were still held confidentially, but I think just not being able to say that we were a confidential resource really scared people off from
sure.
using our services. So in the fall, we became, as of June, there was some executive orders through the CSU system that granted programs like SAFER confidentiality. And so we saw more students in 10 weeks than we did all of last year.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, which you would think, oh, it's an increase in people coming forward. Their problem must be getting worse.
No.
And we would say no.
No.
Actually, this is a positive.
Yeah.
Because people are feeling comfortable coming forward. And at RISE, you know, we work really closely with SAFER. Mm-hmm. I think we're ahead of the game. There's a real push at the state and national level for local rape crisis centers and universities to collaborate. And we have had a very strong and positive relationship for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And we hold each other accountable, and we really want to make sure that we're both providing the best and most sensitive services and best practices that we can to our community as a whole, because Cal Poly is part of the larger San Luis Obispo community.
Right, and you have a big population here.
Mm-hmm. And we do, yeah. And we serve not just, and that's the other thing, is one of the misconceptions is that sexual assault is all about college campuses, and it is a huge issue there, but it's everywhere. It's a community-wide issue. Yeah, absolutely. And so our advocates are confidential as well, and in a little bit of a different way. We have a protection that we don't have to report to anyone, right? So somebody can come to us and disclose what's happened to them as long as they're over 18. That remains confidential. And then we're protected from having to be subpoenaed if there's a court
mm-hmm.
case,
mm-hmm.
Which happens not as often as we might like. Mm-hmm. And so we work really closely with Cal Poly to make SAFER, to make sure that students are aware of all of their options, what their rights are as victims, and what resources are out there in the community, and let them decide what's going to work best for them.
Do you think that the increased national coverage about this topic helped move that confidentiality forward? I mean, it really seems a given that, oh my goodness, why would people want to go forward and report mm-hmm. when they don't feel that safe
mm-hmm.
in a program called SAFER? You know? Yeah.
Well, I definitely think examining how to take a survivor-centered approach is really key mm-hmm. To that change. And I think it can be a really difficult position for universities because they want to know what is happening so that they can address the issue. And so it's a balance of wanting to hold people accountable and wanting justice and balancing that with honoring the survivor because the person who's been in that position who has experienced a sexual assault or a dating relationship, and they're not asked to be put in a position of being an advocate. They're just trying to heal and survive and move on with their life. And so there can be a lot of pressure on them to make reports and go through a really difficult process and expose themselves in a way. And I think we have to be really respectful mm-hmm. of their confidentiality and their healing process. But that can be hard because we get a lot of questions of, you know, why aren't you doing this, or why aren't there more reports? And I think really the reporting comes down to whether we as a community make it safe enough to report. And so, you know, there's a lot of times as advocates, we are put in a position where we want to see justice served as the next person, but we really honor the person's wishes as we can because we know their healing process needs to come first.
Right.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and available all around the world online at kcbx.org. Our topic for today is addressing sexual assault on college campuses, and my guests are bringing their expertise to the discussion. They are Jesse Torrey with RISE, Ashley Vereen with RISE, Sherry Love for SAFER on Cal Poly's campus, and Katie Palmer with SAFER. We welcome your comments or questions about today's topics and invite you into our conversation. You can reach us by calling us at 781-3875. And I have Dan on the line who's been very patient, so I'm going to go ahead and see if we can bring Dan in. Dan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, or just kind of a question.
Okay,
well, yeah,
great.
Great show, thanks. Yeah, I would just go back early in the show, and you guys are talking kind of more about how the majority of men are not perpetrators, but the majority of perpetrators are men. And I'm just kind of wondering if that seems to be true. And then why are it usually, like in the show, it's all women, you guys have all women there. Why is there not more men involved? And like what can men really do to help, you know, prevent sexual assault? And then I guess my other piece would be also this issue is almost like epidemic now in college campuses, and we have these prestigious universities, and these young men that are being admitted to these universities are, you know, committing these sexual assaults. And why is that happening? If you have, you know,
well, let me ask you, Dan, what, you know, you're a guy, so you're on the show now, which
yeah.
I think is really cool. And I agree, you know, we are talking about things that are both men and women. What do you think some of those answers are?
Well, I mean, personally, I feel that it's really, I mean, it's always been kind of labeled as more of a women's issue, sexual assault is a women's issue, and kind of looked at from top down instead of bottom up. So, like, how can we, you know, protect women from getting sexual assaulted, and that's just going to occur? Like, we've kind of have this tolerance. Like, it's okay, it's going to happen, so how do we prevent it from happening? So let's carry pepper spray, or let's put on these blue light systems or whatever they are, and
right.
Let's not walk late at night, or let's do this. Because
or walk in groups.
Yeah,
or,
because this is, you know, intrinsic to life, and it's going to happen. And I mean,
that's a good point.
So, I don't know. I just feel that it's always when I see these, you know, movements against sexual assault, there's maybe one male, but it seems that I do have, you know, I understand the fact that, yes, males do experience sexual assault, and that's very true. But either way, the perpetrator, if it's male on... if it's a male experience being the survivor or the victim, or a female, a high percentage, I would say plus 95% is probably male perpetrator. And
mm-hmm. Yes.
Why are so little men indifferent to the situation? Why has it become so tolerated? I have my views, and I'm just kind of curious what the professionals are thinking or what their strategy is.
I love your comments, and I'm going to turn it over to them now.
So first of all, thank you so much, Dan, for calling in. We really appreciate that. I think that you raise a couple of really, really good questions. And that's kind of something that we've been dealing with at SAFER is how do we engage men and how do we make people care who have traditionally been pretty apathetic to this issue? And particularly when society does treat it as a woman's issue. And as Ashley said earlier, this isn't a woman's issue. This is a human rights issue. And it can happen to anyone. And it's not just, it doesn't just function on the gender binary, but goes throughout the entire spectrum. And so, like I said earlier, SAFER has been working to hire more men to get this perspective of a male perspective. Studies have shown time and time again that men are more likely to listen to men than women. So I think that that's one aspect of this. However, I think that almost more important than that is to start having conversations about dismantling this way that society's been functioning as treating sexual assault as a woman's issue and having these conversations about what consent is, talking about gender roles, which if you're unfamiliar with the term, are basically a set of standards and expectations that have been outlined by society that discuss or tell people how men should act and how women should act. And if you go revisit this and look at this in an academic view or however you want to look at it, I guess, men have been socially conditioned to be kind of tough. They've been conditioned to be aggressive and violent sometimes, traditionally. While women have been conditioned to be soft-spoken, to be shyer, to be coy. So looking at how these gender roles can play into sexual assault, I think does a lot of things, particularly in answer to your question. Looking at why men aren't engaged and women are, why there are four women here who have been part of this and, you know, our respective organizations, and we don't have as many men. We don't have any man represented here at this table today.
Well, we have Dan.
We do. Yeah. We have Dan. Yes. So thank you, Dan. So I think that really starting those conversations with not only your friends, not only your coworkers, however appropriate that may be, but with your children, absolutely, with you know, your cousins, with your nieces, with your nephews, start it way earlier. People should not be learning about sexual assault when they go to college. That's ridiculous.
Well, and that goes back to what you were talking about, Ashley, with the education. So you're dealing with younger males and females. Mm-hmm. And what do you find when you're talking with a middle schooler that are some of the issues that kind of are leading into what we're seeing later on?
It's very interesting that, you know, we talk about the middle schoolers. When I was doing presentations just a few weeks ago for a middle school here in San Luis Obispo, I was actually pretty encouraged with some of the responses that these young men were giving when we were talking specifically about gender roles. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about how, is it fair that society says that men, you know, should do these things and women should do these things? And so many of the boys were saying, well, no, I mean, men should be able to be nurturing and kind,
right,
you know, just as much as women should be able to be strong. And then there's a shift when you start getting into high school. I go into high schools and suddenly the boys are very, very supportive of these gender roles. So there's something that happens in this time in between middle school and kind of the end of high school where they start to really embrace the idea that it is a woman's issue to not be raped, or that's the woman's responsibility. I mean, we have a program that addresses, you know, a male's not only role in preventing sexual assault, but just in role in society, called My Strength, which we do in, I think, 3 to 4 different school sites. And it really is a talking about positive masculinity. It's talking about raising awareness and bringing them to the table, because so many of them feel like they don't have a place at this table, and we want them to feel that way. And, I mean, it's so important.
And, Jesse, you look like you want to say something here.
Just on that topic, I think all of the points that Katie and Ashley made are really great. And, Dan, what you brought up, I think, is so important, and it's a big discussion that we're having these days kind of in this movement mm-hmm. to end gender-based mm-hmm. violence. This work started in the 60s and 70s
right.
really out of a need to protect women, right?
Right.
And so it started out of the feminist movement, and it was literally the SARP Center that was mm-hmm. the Rape Crisis Center here started out in a garage and women meeting in parks to figure out how are we going to deal with this, because there was nothing. Mm-hmm. And the same with domestic violence work. Answering a need then, we stand on the legacy of those who came before us who started this mm-hmm. movement. And I get chills when I think about it, because it's a privilege. Mm-hmm. And we're in a different place now. Mm-hmm. And we really are talking about how do we move to the next level, and that means that we bring everybody to the table.
Absolutely.
We have, in the past, we told men, this isn't your place. And men who said, I don't rape, so okay,
why can't
I'm good.
I be a part of this?
Or they said, you know,
it's not my problem.
It's not my problem. Yeah. I'm a good guy. It's not my problem.
Right.
And so that door wasn't always open. That door is opening. And but it's still, it's like, what does that mean? So how do I be an active member of my community, a positive bystander? One of the things for RISE is we bring men as crisis volunteers, mm-hmm. and they answer our crisis line, and they respond to victims. And there was some controversy about that, you know, would
yeah.
women be comfortable? And we have found in a huge way, it's been really therapeutic.
I'll bet.
Absolutely.
And restorative to mm-hmm. see men who are there to help.
Who can bring that balance.
And change their mm-hmm. idea of what a man can be. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to let Sherry
There's kind of a fine line, too, between defining that every assault is the result of misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and,
Absolutely.
You know, that it... That's really a fine line. The mm-hmm. idea that any man who commits an assault, any person who commits an assault, it's a, you know, it's a gender hatred, mm-hmm. or it's, you know, it's pretty fine line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like to frame it in terms of social justice mm-hmm. and the issue of power. And we know that sexual assaults are not about sex as much as about power and asserting right. power, and that there is a sort of a perpetuation of hypermasculinity in culture in the media mm-hmm. that takes distorts reality in a way. Like you were talking about the programs earlier that really focus on lying women. Mm-hmm. And I think there's this media that's really focused on this hyper-masculinity. But we also know in our culture that men do hold a power position in our culture. And so it doesn't – power in itself is not a negative attribute. It's how can we use that power? And I think all of us have areas where we have privilege. And so it's really important for us to think about our areas of power, because I think in having the conversations and dialogues with men, it's very easy for them to feel defensive or attacked. Mm-hmm. And so that's not really helpful. And so for me, it's often helpful to think of where are my areas of power. I mean, I have a job. I have an education. I have ability. And so in those areas, what am I doing? How do I use my power? And am I using it to be a voice for change and support? And so I think when we're able to tap into how difficult it is to acknowledge our areas of privilege, it can help us approach a conversation from a place of empathy, because the reality is it's painful to realize that you're part of the problem. So if I think of racism, and when we start realizing that we, not with intention, do things that are racist or we're part of a racist culture, then that's a painful place for me to be. And to be an ally can be very confusing, because that most people are not allies, or it's hard to be an ally because you don't know where you belong. You're right. outside what society's telling you to be, but you're not sort of inside the group that's been fighting. So mm-hmm. for justice. And so I think acknowledging that it's hard for men to find their place and inviting that and trying to create spaces where men can figure out what it is they need to do to create, and acknowledge that having that position and of power has there are downsides to that. It's very restrictive. And so I think having a conversation that's open to really seeing it as a community issue, that mm-hmm. we're all harmed by this, whether we see ourselves as victims or not, that it really affects our culture in profound ways. How can we have a healthy relationship in this type of climate?
Right.
How can we communicate? How can we connect?
And then taking it back around to you, Dan, you know, both of the organizations have opened themselves up to men and inviting men to be part of the organization and the solution. So that's how you, as an individual who's male, who's concerned, can get involved and be part of the process rather than just standing outside saying, it ain't me.
Yeah, yeah, come to the volunteer training. Come be a part of us.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely, yeah. I think that's totally right, and I think it's great that the doors are opening more and it's not so polarized, and that's great.
Okay, well, thanks for calling
in. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices. If you just joined us and would like to hear the entire show, you can. You can go to our website at kcbx.org, use the drop-down menu for News Talk, and click on Central Coast Voices. You can listen to our most recent show in its entirety or go to the archives to listen to shows that you may still have an interest in going back to. Our discussion today is sexual assault on college campuses, and my guests are Jesse Torrey, Associate Director at RISE, Ashley Vereen, Education Services Coordinator at RISE, Sherry Love, Assistant Coordinator for SAFER, and Katie Palmer, Student Assistant for SAFER. We have about 20 minutes left in today's show, and there are still time for your questions or comments. We want to bring your voice into our discussion. You can call us at 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875. And when we were talking with Dan about the inclusion of men, you made a really good point, which is this movement really did grow out of the 60s, where it kind of was an us and them, and things are changing. So there is a process now, start by believing. Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's a new kind of approach. I mean, that kind of invites a lot more. So I'm going to open it up to you. Talk about start by believing.
Sure. I mean, what Sherry talked about this being a community issue, I think that's a great lead-in to Start By Believing. Start By Believing campaign was developed at a national organization, End Violence Against Women International, really with the intent of how can we engage whole communities in this issue. It came to San Luis Obispo out of conversations with the district attorney's office, and at the time the SARP Center, and the district attorney's office really struggling with wanting to be able to prosecute successfully more sexual assault cases. And they said, you know, what we really need are jurors that are educated and jurors who will believe victims. Hmm. Because not just victim blaming, but not believing what we talked about at the top of the show.
And where does the jury pool come from?
From our community.
From our community, right.
And so Start By Believing is really simple. It's about what can I do as a loved one, a sister, a friend, a parent, a community member, when somebody close to me says that I've been sexually assaulted. Because usually when somebody discloses, they're going to disclose to somebody that's close to them. Mm-hmm. That response that they get can really impact what they do next, mm-hmm. whether they ever say anything to anybody again. And it also can lead them toward a path of healing, and maybe they do report to law enforcement, do go to SAFER, do go to an agency like RISE and start getting the support that they need. And so it's really that simple. It's really when somebody comes to you, when a loved one comes to me and says, you know, I was sexually assaulted, I can say, first thing is, I'm really sorry that happened to you. Mm-hmm. And I believe you. And what can I do to support you?
And it was not your fault. That's mm-hmm. another mm-hmm. huge one.
Absolutely. And so we had a campaign at the beginning of 2013, and we continue with Cal Poly and at RISE really talking about this, bringing it into the presentations at the middle schools and the high schools and our programs there. It's big at Cal Poly, and we still really try to send that message, because that means everyone in this community can have an impact and do their part just by starting to believe. And you know, some people say, well, what if it's not true? You know, I don't have all the facts.
You can believe it's possible.
So what we really talk about is we have the luxury of not, I mean, the police have a really difficult job. It's their job to investigate crimes and for that legal process to go through and potentially end up in the court system, and that may or may not happen. That's not what we're talking about. We're really talking about how can we be emotionally supportive and present with people in their trauma.
And we're talking about it all different levels, because not everybody who's been assaulted is going to report that assault.
Right.
You know?
Most don't.
And the point really isn't that every single assault results in a court case.
Oh, no. Not even close.
Okay. So, you know, what we are talking about, what happens to the individual who was assaulted.
Right.
You know, and how they go on with the rest of their life and what they do with their life and how protective and how they recover from that incident.
And you're getting right on what I was going to say is, you know, most important is their journey to healing.
Yes.
That I care about that, you know, so much more than, you know, making sure we get that prosecution, you know, rate up. That would be wonderful. But most important to me is the survivor's journey from victim to survivor.
And there's always the concern about violent sexual assaults, people that are predators that are going to go out and do it again. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, we want those people to be reported. And mm-hmm. there's still the concern of the victim.
Right.
And we have a call from Charles. And Charles, are you there?
I am.
Hi. How can we, what question or comment do you have?
Well, thanks. I have a macro question that's kind of a comment, which is I'd like to ponder whether society has properly delegated any responsibility to academia to deal with sexual assault. Shouldn't rather the point be made that we would advocate and instruct both students and parents to go directly to law enforcement and bypass academia, which has been proven, for the most part, to be inept at handling sexual assault?
You make an interesting point. I'll let these people answer that.
Well, I think it's really important as we're talking. We've mentioned that we do take a survivor-centered approach, and that is because, again, the individual, we really put the power back in their hands to make choices about how they want to begin their healing process. The students that come through our office are given all options available to them and support to pursue their reporting options. It's important and confusing to understand that there are two reporting options for students. One is through the criminal justice system, and one is through the university. So the criminal justice system would be a report to the university police or the city police or whatever the police jurisdiction is, and that would be a legal process, and so the student can choose to do that, and we would advocate for that and provide support and education about how that process works, connect them to victim witness, and we definitely support them in making that choice. Students have another option available to them if the perpetrator of the incident was another student, and then that falls under the university jurisdiction. Now, that means that the university then has power to basically sanction, expel a student. And so those are within the realms of what a university can control. So the university can control whether they're in the same classes, the same residence halls. It can control whether they can even attend Cal Poly. And so I think it's that is the piece that the university can do. But again, and that's an option for the student, that the university can also provide support through academic support. Sometimes students struggle with classes or can't complete a class. So there are resources available through the university that not all students realize that aren't available to other victim survivors of sexual assault. Does that mean that we definitely, I think, as a university want to support students to make reports, because we do not want perpetrators on our campuses. And if it is determined that a student is a danger to campus, then action will be taken immediately despite the victim survivor's wishes. So we have to, as a university, provide a safe campus climate. But again, there is a due process that occurs. And sometimes even there has to be the preponderance of evidence. For the university, what I really appreciate is that sanctions can begin to be issued with a more likely than not preponderance of evidence. So that means that it's a 51% likelihood that something happened and the university can start issuing sanctions. And that is different than the legal process, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. So a lot of times students will actually see more outcomes through the university. And the last thing I just want to say is that we hear about the students who are where it has gone wrong, and we don't hear from the students who've had very positive experiences with the university because they get to move on and get their education and heal. And so those are not the students whose stories you hear in the newspaper or anything like that, because they've gotten to move on with their lives, and that's our goal, is that they just get to become survivors and achieve their goals.
Important point. Did that answer your question, Charles?
Really not satisfactorily. And just to say this, there's no other crime, be it burglary, homicide, or whatever that is treated in a like manner in the academy? Why is sexual assault diminished to the point that victims are confused with their choices as opposed to going to law enforcement versus going to the university? Why shouldn't the first responder in any situation of sexual assault on campus or otherwise be the local police? And if they in turn want to liaison with campus police, the university, that's a law enforcement decision. But to confuse victims with the choices delays the gathering of important evidence and allows perpetrators to think that they're in an environment where it's safe to commit sexual assault. I'm suggesting that the primary and first responder should always be law enforcement, never the university. If the university wants to play a supportive role in counseling or whatever, that's an option, but it shouldn't be the first choice.
Jesse, do you want to respond to it?
Well, I thank you for your call, Charles, and for bringing this issue up, and your passion is clear. Coming from a victim advocate perspective, you know, like Sherry talked about, we're really looking at what the survivor wants. The thing about sexual assault that's different from all of those other crimes is what the nature of that victimization is. I would argue that there is no other crime that is so violating and so intimate, and the trauma that victims experience I think really is what has led us as victim advocates, both at SAFER and at RISE, to listen to what the survivor would like. Those acts take all the power away from that person. And oftentimes, unfortunately, going through the law enforcement process continues that trauma. And so when they are able to dictate and to decide when and what process they want to take, and they do have all the information, that really starts their power being reclaimed. And Katie, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, Charles, I also just want to thank you for calling in and, again, showing your passion, as Jesse said. Something I just like to tack on to that as well is both RISE and SAFER work really closely with our police departments, and we have seen tremendous growth in recent years. Just with having conversations with the chief of police of what is the best way to talk with a survivor of sexual assault, mm-hmm. What are the limitations to them talking? So I know for one thing, as working both with SAFER and being a crisis counselor with RISE, is that those survivors have the right to an advocate throughout the entire process. And that role of that advocate in that room, wherever they are, is to let the survivor know that they don't have to do anything if they don't want to, but also outline exactly what the process is going to look like, which is new, which didn't always exist. And as Jesse said, has historically had survivors relive that trauma, which is a really painful experience.
And I will just say, on the flip side, for some people, it's a really empowering experience. Mm-hmm. So it's not across, you know, each individual has their own reaction and response mm-hmm. to what's happened to them. Mm-hmm. And our job and our mission as an organization and as victim advocates is to support that and support their process. You know, it is hard because we do want to see perpetrators held accountable. And I will tell you personally, it can be really frustrating when I see a situation where I would love for that person to report to law enforcement mm-hmm, because absolutely. I want to nail this guy and we want to get him, you know, being held responsible. But that's not my job, and that's not my role as an advocate. And hopefully, by creating a community where people are believed, and by creating a community where people can come forward, we will then see more reporting happening. And I think we're seeing that already.
But thank you, Charles, for your call. You bring up some really good points, and I think your passion is shared by other people.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And can I just add one thing? You know, this is not a scientific study, but we did the Start by Believing campaign, and then the following year, San Luis Obispo Police Department saw a great increase in the reporting of sexual assault. So, mm-hmm. you know, I can't say that the two are connected, but I think that's an interesting
right. I was
situation.
Going to add that it comes to a larger issue as a society, why more people don't choose to report, mm-hmm. And why organizations like ours need to exist to have advocates. You know, as a society, I truly think that if we were more supportive and understanding, you would see so much more reporting to law enforcement.
And Hyla, we have, how do you say your name?
Hyla.
Hyla, we have just a few minutes.
Did you
want to make a comment?
Yes, I read and I think I heard on the radio about Mission Prep, and there were some youngsters, either middle or high school, that were some boys that were, I guess, accosted or you know, not, I don't know what happened exactly, but they were worried about taking showers because they were being accosted by other young men, or I don't know who it was. And this is an issue that goes down into our society starting at a young age, like the earlier man said on the phone.
Yes.
And I respect everything about Cal Poly being said, and that's good, but this is something that's happening at a much earlier age, and it worries me terribly.
Right. And you absolutely bring up a good point, because the education that RISE is doing that they've talked about is for schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what they're doing in schools. They need something like the RISE and the other group to
And they're
come
available
in and
there too.
Talk to the students, mm-hmm. perhaps.
Yeah. And we're seeing a big increase in schools wanting us to come in.
Right.
You know, previously it would have been, you know, it was almost we had to ask, you know, to come in. And now they're coming to us and wanting it because they're seeing a need. They're seeing a need that these things are happening younger and younger and younger.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, Katie said earlier, the first time you're talking about sexual assault or consent should not be in college. It should be so much earlier.
Absolutely.
That the idea of sexually assaulting someone is just so abhorrent and awful that it can't, you know, go on, and you've got to start early.
Well, I think it comes from a violent society in general. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking very generally about, you know, warlike and all that kind of stuff. And we all know what goes on during war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a problem. And the last speaker, Charles, brought up something about going to the police, and I think that, and the, you know, prosecuting, I mean, that I think that needs to be done more.
Well, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Real quick comments, summary comments, something that we didn't hit. We got about...
Yeah. So really quickly, particularly with the conversation with Dan, we talked a lot about having these conversations, but we never really gave what that conversation looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So for my last parting comment, I just want to give people some food for thought who may be listening. So SAFER defines... I should start by this. So... We talked about not assaulting. So SAFER talks about consent, right? Because that is how you don't assault people. So we define consent by three factors. The first one is that both parties cannot be incapacitated to give consent, that it must be positive and sincere. So that means without coercion. And that means that – and the third factor is that they can say no at any time, even after it's started. So when you're having these conversations, don't just talk about gender roles, but also talk about what consent is and the importance of communication between partners, however many there may be, depending on, you know, whoever it may be between. So that's my last comment.
Excellent. Yes. Very nice.
Absolutely about consent. And I want to thank my guests today, Jesse Torrey, Associate Director at RISE, Ashley Vereen, Education Services Coordinator for RISE, Sherry Love, Assistant Coordinator for SAFER, and Katie Palmer, Student Assistant for SAFER. Listeners who called in today with questions and comments, thank you to you. Center Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities with the help of San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, and made possible by underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Next week on Voices, host Fred Monroe will be joined with his guests from the local hands in Nepal as they discuss their efforts to promote literacy in creating education opportunities and promoting community development assistance. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. No, you got it in there. You got it.